So you're still on holiday then, are you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. It's a marathon holiday.
It's been months.
I know. It's like a very long Sabbath. But you know what? It's not the end of a long period. It's the start of the new period. That's what I'm taking with me.
Yeah, but I said that about 4 weeks ago now. Now everybody's forgotten that.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Not me. Do you know, to me, it's like you just said it, I don't know, 10 minutes ago. That's how fresh it is.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 291 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page. There is Joe Davis. You know, little thing, we're pre-recording this. This is coming out weeks later. You know,
I know.
What can we do?
I could ask how you are, but I already know.
What? Yeah, I don't know how I'll be. Who knows where we'll be or what we'll be like by the time this goes out. But this is an interview that you did with a friend of yours and a fellow celebrant.
Yeah.
Called Claire Bradford. So tell us a little bit about this.
Well, Claire is just a dear friend and a wonderful celebrant. In fact, annoyingly, she's a competitor, really. I say she's a friend. But really, we're in the same business. But she does much more. She's more of a wedding celebrant and a bit less of a funeral celebrant. And she won Wedding Celebrant of the Year a couple of years back. She's very good. She's annoyingly good, if I'm honest. But that said, she is a wonderful person. And she had been thinking about walking the Camino, this pilgrimage. And I should say, before we go any further, there is a dear listener to this podcast who was in my mind the whole time I was doing this interview. This is Martin, a listener who has become a friend. So it's that way round, which is wonderful. And bless him, he's had to cancel so many times, and originally due to COVID and then injury and more recently family illness. So, you know, we know that listeners do this and plan to do this. So as soon as she'd done this, I thought, well, it would be great to hear this, because there may be many people wondering about pilgrimage. And you did a pilgrimage, didn't you? A few years back.
Or a pubgrimage, as my wife called it.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating issue. I don't think I need to set it up any more than that, really, because I ask her all the questions as we go. So here's the interview. Well, friends, it's so great to welcome to the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast my dear friend, Claire Bradford. Claire, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me on. This is so exciting.
It's great, isn't it? And you're not just on because you're my friend. You're here because you've just come back from walking the Camino Way, and we want to hear all about that. But before we get into all that malarkey, for those that don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so just like you, I am an independent celebrant, and so I do weddings and funerals mostly, and I also train other celebrants. That's kind of, that keeps me out of mischief in the daytime. I'm a mum to two lovely girls and a wife to one husband. I live in Worthing, which, as you know as well, is a great place to be.
It's paradise, frankly.
We have the sea at the end of the road and the downs at our back, and so that's gorgeous. And there's a good bacon butty down at the cafe.
Very much so. Very much so.
We've had many a conversation over those. And what else? I am a lover of tea and cake, always, and long chats. I love being outside and being active, but not in that kind of, you know, I'm not one of those people that love a sea swim and stuff, or muddy runs or things like that. I'm a kind of more of a comfortable being outside kind of a girl. But I do love being outside. And I know you and I have had lots of conversations about this, but I would call myself religious adjacent, let's say.
Explain that a bit more. That's interesting language.
Well, I just thought it'd be relevant to this.
Yeah, it is.
I was brought up Church of England. I used to work for the Church of England, in fact, for the Diocese of Chichester. And Yeah, for a number of years, even thought about ordination. But anyway, couldn't nail my colours to the mast entirely, and always sort of, I'm a bit like, do you remember Mulder and Scully and the X-Files?
Yes.
He had that poster that said, "I want to believe." I'm sort of feel like that. But I
Okay.
kind of, yeah.
Great.
But I kind of do, and I kind of don't. Anyway, I know we've discussed this quite a lot, but I feel that yeah, I love listening to your podcast and things like it, and
Ah, thanks.
I love those kind of conversations, but I'm not a churchy person at present, put it that way.
Okay, well, that's perfect. Thank you. You've identified yourself well.
Ah,
So
good.
listen, let's get into the meat of this because we want to finish wrap this up so we can go and walk at Nep tonight, our respective
Yes,
families.
we
So that's lovely.
do.
See the storks. But you've come back from the Camino Way. So let's do the 101. What is the Camino Way for those that don't know, or the Camino de Santiago, whatever it's
Okay,
called?
so the Camino de Santiago is like a network of pilgrim routes that
Okay.
all go to Santiago in Spain, Santiago de Compostela. And the reason that they go there is because that is where the shrine of the Apostle St. James is, and apparently his relics were found in the 9th century, and people have been walking there ever since. I'm not sure if they were found there, I think they moved from there, but that's
Okay.
where St. James is. And so there's been like a number of different ways that you can go. And the interesting fact about this is, I don't know if you know, but the scallop shell is often used as a kind of pilgrim's
Yeah,
symbol.
seen that. Yeah.
And I was told that one of the reasons for that, well, there's various stories attached to it, but one of the reasons is, if you imagine a scallop shell, and you've got that kind of narrow end and the wider end, and then you've got all the lines going into the narrow end, and that is the same as all of these different routes all
Oh,
going
okay.
converging in one
Nice.
place to Santiago. So it's actually a network, like I say, but the most common way of getting there, most popular way, is the Camino Francés, which is the one that starts in St. James. Sorry, no, it doesn't start in St. James. It starts in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port in France, and then goes over the Pyrenees, and it's about 500 miles or 800 kilometers to
Oh.
Santiago de Compostela. That's the one I did. It's about 35 days walking, depending on how long you choose to do it, but
So,
that's what I did, and
yeah.
about 15 miles a day through like a variety of amazing landscapes. And about 220,000 people apparently walk it every year these days. So, but they've been walking
Wow.
since the 9th century. So yeah.
So it's yeah, I mean it's I don't know that I could name many pilgrim routes, but it's definitely one of the more famous
Yeah.
worldwide pilgrim routes. Why did you decide to do it? Is it something you've always wanted to do, or did you specifically think it's here for now? This is the moment. This is the time in my life I want to do it. What prompted you to leave family, friends, work for 35 days to do this extraordinary walk?
Well, first of all, I'd not really heard of it until my friend was telling me about it. She did it a couple of
Okay.
years ago, and she told me about it just before she did it. And I mean, and I'm really not that kind of person that copies everything their friend's doing or anything like that, but she just told me about it. And the minute she started telling me about it, I just had this real sense, this is for me, this is something. It just, don't know, just hit different. It kind of made me go, I really want to slash need to do that. It was just a
Okay.
certainty in my head straight away. And then I thought, oh yeah, but I can't really do that. I mean, it's crazy. I can't take 5, 6 weeks out of my life and just kind of go. But the more I thought about it, the more it really felt right. I just turned 50. That kind of felt like quite
Okay.
a
I
shedding
didn't know
because you.
that.
Oh yeah. So
That.
that was last June, and I don't know. You were around that time, not for everyone, but a lot of people. And I suppose lots of things converged. So my daughters, they're now 21 and 17, and about to be 22 and 18, and they're getting more and more independent. My eldest is living away. My youngest is more and more independent. And I just felt like my role as a mum's changing. Of course, of course I'm still their mum, but you're not there having to be there all the time. And
Sure.
therefore I was spending more time with my husband, and also we were sort of doing it was just work stuff, but also, you know, all the bodily stuff that happens around that age, especially to women. And like, lots of things felt like they were changing. And I just felt like I wanted to mark it rather than let it happen to me. Do you know what I mean? To sort of almost welcome it, bring on the, like, the next chapter of my life, really. So that was in my head. And then, but then I still kept coming back to this. Yeah, but I can't take that much time off work. I'm self-employed. How would I do that? And I was talking to my lovely friend and business mentor who died last year, actually, about it. And he was saying, yeah, you're right. You can't take 5 weeks off. That would be very difficult. What about next year? And I said, well, you know, but it'll be the same. And he went, yeah, what about in 5 years' time? And I said, well, yeah, this is the problem. I can't just take, you know, all the funeral directors will forget about me and I won't earn any money and all this stuff. And he said, yeah. And in 10 years' time, you'll have bad knees, and in, you know, 15 years time it'll be something else. And he said, take it from me, as somebody who doesn't have much time left, just do it when you can.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah, it really was. I'm so grateful to him for doing that. And I know I thought about him every day on the Camino, actually. I was very grateful to him for that. Well, for lots of things, but particularly for that, and I kind of felt his encouragement, you know. But also, it, kind of, it chimed with me about that book, 4,000 Weeks. I know you had Oliver Burns, came on your podcast as well, and I really loved that book.
Me too.
And there was just something there about that as well, just that kind of, we don't have an infinite amount of time. And it was all around the time that I'd read that I'd had this conversation with Philip, and it was just, it all came together. And that's, I should say, now is the time.
So. Great. Yeah. So 35 days to invest in yourself, spread over, you know, decades of, you know, busy work, doesn't seem too much, really. Not really. Not when there's 365 days in a year. I've got so many questions for you. So let's just launch into the next one. Let's ask a general one. 35 days walking across a country you don't know, I assume.
Yeah.
In what ways did this pilgrimage meet your expectations? And the next question is kind of what surprised you. So let's start with, in what ways did it meet your expectations?
Okay. So, first of all, the thing that my friend had told me about it, which one of the things that have made me go, oh my God, I need that right now, was she said, Claire, it's amazing. You just literally, all you have to do every day is get up and walk. And that's, you know, that is where it ties in again to that 4,000 weeks idea, that you get this JOMO, this joy of missing out. This is what I'm doing today. I'm not going to be thinking, oh, I could be doing this or I could be doing that. It's all, this is what I'm doing. So there's this clarity of purpose and simplicity as well. You're not making all of the millions of micro decisions you have to make in your everyday life and running a business and being at home and, you know, with kids and things like that. So that was what really, really made me go, oh, I really need that, just to have that utter simplicity. Yeah, and that absolutely delivered, and I loved it.
Oh, right. Yeah,
but, yeah,
right.
That was fabulous.
Yeah.
Other expectations were, I know that I'm somebody, it took me a long time to just trust that I will always make new friends and meet people that inspire me, and absolutely that delivered. I made friends from all over the world, and I made a real Camino family, and I'll probably talk more about them later, but
okay, that's
it was
amazing.
Such a precious thing. It was that was really good. My hope was that it would give me back my trust in myself as well, like a self-reliance. And I think the reason I say that is because when you're in a relationship, you tend to sort of fall into your roles. And I know, for example, if we're walking through an airport, I just tend to always assume my husband's got the passports and stuff because he's just on it with the practical stuff. Mm. And suddenly I was doing all the things. So that's on, you know, on a basic level. But also I realised about 18 months ago, I've got ADHD. And so there was part of me that sort of was going through a bit of a journey with that. And I thought that part of me that goes, oh, can I manage it all? Even though I'm the same person I always was. And it just made me go, yes, I can trust myself. I can.
Great.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And anything else to sort of catch you out? What surprised you? Or anyways, it perhaps, you know, you thought you were going to find something but didn't. I mean, what surprised you?
So I was thinking about this. So some of the things that surprised me were, well, first of all, that surprised me was the intensity of the friendships that I could make in a short space of time. And that, you know, was like an incubator for friendships. So even though we were only together like 35 days or so, I knew more about these people than I did about some of my closest friends, you know, and that was brilliant, you know, but it was a surprise. And the fact that you're doing this thing and you're in a completely unfamiliar place, and yet you're seeing these familiar faces, the characters that come in and out of your walk, as well as the ones I was walking with a lot. We'd see people regularly and go, oh, hi. My husband came out and met me halfway in Leon, and we were in the town centre and in this place that we'd never been to before, and I kept bumping into people and going, oh Richard, this is Paul, oh this is Renee, right. And he was like, you know all these people, and that was brilliant. So that was a surprise, and I suppose one of the big surprises for me was that I was really going with this sense of an expectation that I would find a reconnection with God or with kind of religion. I know, obviously, I'm a Church of England kind of person. And it's Catholic over there, but I was very open to that. So just going into churches and things, which I did, and I knew there were quite a few masses and things like that, and pilgrims' blessings, and I really was quite surprised at how little connection I found with. And normally, I would find that kind of experience quite connecting. And I didn't often. Now, obviously, the ceremonies were in Spanish and stuff. I'm not expecting them to be in English, but it reminded me of that kind of exclusivity that you can feel sometimes where people are standing up, sitting down, singing responses that you don't know, and you end up feeling quite out of it, like an observer. And I know going to church isn't about, you know, what I can get from it, but I was surprised at my lack of connection in those ceremonies. But sometimes I would go into a church, like I say, or go and light a candle for Philip or something, and I would really feel a connection then. And there was one just beautiful ceremony in a space where it was run by a brotherhood of monks, and they were doing like a Gregorian chant type thing. And there was nothing, you didn't have to sing along, you didn't have to know where we were. It was just an experience to be experienced, and that was very different. I did really feel a connection there. In actual fact, they had pilgrims from all over the world there, and so they had the reading, for example, and of course they read it in Spanish, but then they had different pilgrims reading it in South Korean and English and you know, French, German, that kind of thing. And that inclusivity, it really touched me, and I think that was to me where I found God, was more in the connection and the inclusivity and the nature than it was in the churches and the ceremonies and things like that. And I didn't even end up going into the mass in the cathedral at the end, because I just knew by that point that wasn't where.
It's really interesting.
My sense of God was. So that surprised me.
Okay.
Can
I ask you a couple of practical questions? Because there's just for people who don't know. Firstly, let's talk about sleeping arrangements, and let's talk about how much you are on your own versus how much you're walking with a community of people. Because I think that's kind of a key thing for me. So sleeping arrangements, because I'm imagining dorms with 50 people in, because that's what I'd heard.
Yes, and a lot of it was like that, actually. In fact, there was the very first dorm, there's 100 people in.
And these are mixed dorms?
Yes, they are, yeah. And I thought that was going to be really strange at first, but actually it was completely fine. And, and it was a very lovely kind of community.
Snoring, feeling. Bodily noises?
There was some snoring. It wasn't as bad as I had expected. And to be honest, my lovely husband has given me good training in coping coping with that over the years. So yeah, sometimes, in fact, it was the people fiddling around and getting packed up at 5 o'clock in the morning that were more annoying than the snorers. But yeah, okay. On the whole, it was bunk beds and things, and but some places, you know, it's just a lovely row of single beds. Sometimes you had some room, some beds in a smallish room. Sometimes they were in a huge room, and then sometimes we got an Airbnb, or we shared like private rooms, and there's four of us or two of us or whatever in those rooms as well. But mostly, yeah, most of the time it was albergues.
Okay, great. Okay, and then because I didn't know whether you would go for solitude. But it sounds that you've talked quite a lot about the group dynamics and just how wonderful it was making new family and things. Do you get a choice whether you walk solo or with a group of people?
Yes, you absolutely do. And because I went on my own and not expecting to. I knew that I would meet people, but I was expecting that I would be on my own most of the time, and that people would come in and out as they did, but that I would be mostly on my own. And at first, I met two Australians, father and son, at the airport, funnily enough, when I first arrived, Nick and Tom. And then I met them again the first morning, and we started walking together. And then we ended up walking the whole time together. Plus, we met up with an American from Texas, Brittany, on the first day, and she joined us as well, and the four of us walked together pretty much the whole time, actually.
And was that okay? I mean, do you have the philosophy of like, I want to go be on my own, or do you go with the philosophy of I'm gonna let it roll and see what emerges, and not be unhappy whatever emerges?
Well, I went with a let it roll, but I had an expectation that I would be on my own most of the time. And at first I was thinking, oh, am I doing this wrong? Because, you know, like I was saying about wanting to sort of see where I end and my role begins as, you know, wife and mum and everything else.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, how am I just doing that? Am I just kind of putting myself directly from a family situation into another family situation, and therefore kind of, you know, giving away my agency? But actually, no, it was perfect. And I realized, actually, I kind of need that. I'm a connector. I don't need it in as much as I sometimes beat myself up and think I need other people, because otherwise I'll be a complete mess. It wasn't that. We all just kind of really just fit well together. Now, what I wouldn't have liked is if we constantly were talking and I hadn't had any space in my head, which was kind of one of the reasons I wanted to go.
Yeah.
But what was lovely was we often would walk, we'd start walking together, and then sort of we'd maybe chat for a while, and then some people would put their headphones in, or, you know, we'll just kind of walk a bit faster or a bit slower, depending on, you know, how they were feeling that day. And so we often were alone. I spent hours just in my head or listening to music or just being in awe of the world around me, or talking to other people that weren't in our little group. And then what would tend to happen is whoever was at the front, if they kind of came across a nice looking bar or cafe or something, and it felt like a good time for a coffee stop or something, then they'd normally wait and we'd all catch up and so do you fancy that? And so we had, it was a lovely kind of togetherness, but with space around.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, it did surprise me, and I wasn't sure, like I say, for this worry that I wasn't doing it right, and then realised actually that was exactly what I needed in the end. So
that's wonderful. Okay, right. Now, let's cut to the meat, because you and I had breakfast the other day, and you very evidently had many, many stories. So, so I said, I'd be on the podcast, but you could just give me your top three. Okay. I don't know whether you managed to whittle it down, but could you just give us three good moments from the Camino?
Well, there were so many, and, you know, with it being me, with they all to do with the people that I met on the way and things. One of them was a lovely woman, Renee from America, who we met, and who I was walking with one day, and we were just chatting away, and she was telling me about her life, and it turned out that she'd had a very, very difficult time in 2020, because one of her twin sons died, And then 8 months later, her husband died of a heart attack right in front of her. Wow. So really, really tragic time. So she would, you know, talking about all her experiences, and we were just talking about everything, like I say, in this incubator of a walk. And then sort of later on, she said, oh, could you just grab my water for me from the side pocket? And I said, oh, which bottle is it? And she said, it's a clear one. And then she said, because the ashes of my son and my husband are in the other one. And she was scattering them as she went. And but we're getting up to this place on the Camino called the Cruz de Ferro, and like the Iron Cross. And it's quite an iconic place on the Camino. Mm. It's a place where traditionally you take a pebble or a stone from your hometown, from wherever your home is, and you place it there to mark something that you're either letting go of or right. just saying goodbye to, or to mark your presence there on the Camino, really. Mm. But it's a really sort of symbolic moment on the Camino, a real ritual. And she'd asked me the day before, she said, I would like to scatter their ashes, the rest of their ashes on the Cruz de Ferro. Would you be with me when I did it? And I was like, wow, that was a huge thing. And so we talked about it just before we went up and what we were sort of leaving behind and things. And then she invited the others that were with us as well. And so we all went up together, and we all sort of stood around this, because when I say go up, you're literally going up a pile of stones that people have left over the years. It's just all of these stones. And so I then, with her permission, I did a committal poem. It's not one I've written, by Ruth Burgess. But I talked about them and talked a little bit about them, you know, included their names and things within it. It was very simple. And then she scattered their ashes, and then she also gave them the bottle to me and to the others. And it was just this really massive moment. And we were all just in bits. So that was,
that's very powerful. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it really, really was. Wow. So that was one. And I felt very privileged to be there for that. One was just after the ceremony that I was talking about, with the singing and the reading and stuff. And one of our fellow pilgrims that we met, a friend called Katie from America, she was there, and she was actually one of the people who read one of the readings. And she told us that her sister-in-law had just died that day, I think it was, and it had been quite a shock, and she was obviously reeling from that. And we were talking to her outside just after the ceremony, and so I went to give her a hug, and then Nick, my Camino friend, he sort of came and hugged her from the other side. And then it ended up, there was about 20 of us in the end, we all just kind of
scrum. Came around,
and all just like this massive hug. And with her in the middle of it, and we just, it was so moving. We were all just really, you know, just there. I think we just realized how much we cared for each other. Like, it was that intensity of that friendship and that love for each other. But also just suddenly realizing how many of us were there, all just kind of doing that.
And yeah, that's amazing. Really, really, there's something very powerful about love expressed so purely. And it's, I mean, the phrase that comes to mind is, this is holy ground, you know, like God's in this place, you know, right now. God is somehow made manifest in love.
Yeah.
You know, there's for me, but I'm not putting words in your mouth. What did you say? Did you have a sense of the divine in any way, or was it just about humanity?
Very, very much so, particularly in that moment. And also because I just had it already in that very inclusive ceremony. And then actually the monk came out, a priest, I'm not quite sure what he was, but he came out and he was speaking to us. He'd seen this and he was moved by it as well, and he was talking to us, and he was talking to us about Saint James and things, but in a way that was really, he kind of really got us. And yeah, for me, it was that connection. I think that moment of the hug really just made manifest that kind of, oh right, we are all connected. We are all.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And I'm a real believer in God is in all, you know, is in all of us, and we are all God and all of that stuff. And so there was this kind of moment of us all being one, you know, saying this just after Trinity Sunday, and hearing all the people trying to trip over Trinity Sunday explanations. And I don't think you need to explain that. That's an experiential thing. And there, in that moment, we were all separate people, but all one at the same time. And it was
beautiful.
Amazing.
Wonderful. Okay. Go on then. One more. One more. It's all I'm allowing you, he said meanly.
Okay. So one of the characters that we met quite regularly, and he would pop up everywhere, was this guy called Paul. He was from Holland. He was very happy. He was like constantly like up, but also looked really scary. He looked really rock and roll. He wore a pentagram and everything. He was really like, you wouldn't want to pick a fight with him. No way. But he was such a lovely, lovely guy. And one day we happened to be at a beer festival, as you do, in Porto Marin. We seem to come across things like that regularly.
Suddenly I want to do the Camino.
I know, suddenly it's appealing. and he was very excited that night, and he was showing us a ring that he'd bought for his girlfriend. And he said, I'm going to propose when we get to Santiago, because she was meeting him at Santiago. Mm. And they were going to walk on together to Finisterre, which is by the coast. So he was so excited, and he said, will you all be there? And we were like, yeah, man. But it wasn't going to be for a few more days. Yeah. But it turned out we were all there on the day, and one of the other guys from Holland, he'd sort of organized everybody and got everyone's phone numbers. So we did this thing where we'd all got to Santiago, so we were like so excited. And then we were going to pose for a group photo, which we did, and the guy that was organizing it all, he sort of, I said, yeah, right, take them. But we took the photo, but we knew then that we'd sort of disperse, but not like far away, but just kind of start chatting to each other, but kind of giving them space, and that Paul was going to go down on one knee and ask Tess to marry him. And which he did. And like the whole, we all just started, you know, whooping and cheering. But the whole, there were so many people in the big square. So it was right in front of the cathedral. And like everybody saw what was going on, and it's just like the place erupted. It was just this amazing moment.
Joyful.
It was just this joining of people. Like, I knew most of the people who were in this group photo, but some of them were people that I'd only seen once or twice. And then the people who joined in with the celebrations and came up to us afterwards were people we'd not seen before, but they'd been on their own journeys as well. And again, this joining together of this absolute kind of and this coming together of joy and support.
That's
and
amazing. Great.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Claire. That's so good. It's fascinating just listening to you, that all the stories, they weren't about a private moment where you said they're all with people and sensing the divine in the group of people, which is just fascinating for me. So we need to start wrapping this whole thing up, because we've talked for longer than we should have. I know. Fancy that. Yeah. What overall, because I know you'll still be reflecting on it for a long time to come, but what do you think you learned about yourself during that time?
I learned as if I needed to, but I kept thinking I should have some time alone. And I did have time alone, but fundamentally it underlined to me that I am a connector. Yes. I love to be connected and I love to connect people, and it shouldn't be a learning really, but it really made me re-realize, I suppose. Another thing it made me re-realize is that, again, it's so obvious, but having a really clear goal is incredibly powerful. So this is good for my ADHD stuff as well, but okay, so when you start the Camino, you know that you are going to Santiago, that you're going to be heading west all the time, and you're going to Santiago. If you start diverting off somewhere else, then you're going to get to a different place, but you've got a path. And then every day you wake up, you're not going necessarily to Santiago that day, but you're going to the next bit. And sometimes just the place that you're going to have lunch, or that inviting looking tree that looks shady to sit under and have a rest. Just having that, it really just clears out all of the noise and just makes you go, yes, this is where I'm going. And it's not like you can't stop and smell the flowers on the way or have these fantastic experiences that you weren't expecting, but you just, it just takes out so much of the extra stuff, going back to that whole JOMO, that joy of missing out, that, you know, this is where I'm going and I'm choosing it every day. That was massive.
Okay, that's great.
The other thing was that I suppose I learned that there's a phrase, the Camino provides, as in like you'll get what you need, not necessarily what you want, but you'll get what you need. And that really just proved true a time and time again. You know, you came into this albergue, but the one you ended up going to, you met the most amazing person, or it was really fantastic in some way you weren't expecting. And that's the same with life. And also on the Camino, there are these yellow arrows everywhere that show you the way to go. And you kind of think, oh, well, am I going to, am I going the right way? And you always just see a little yellow arrow, just as you're thinking, I'm not really sure that I'm in the right place here, and stuff. And it's kind of made me learn that actually often I did know the way, and this just confirmed it. But it's also made me learn that I can look for my own little yellow arrows in life, just my gut instinct and the things that are happening around me and that sort of thing.
Wonderful. That sounds amazing. There's lots more to say. For the benefit of any of our listeners who now, having heard you talk about it, are thinking, contemplating walking the Camino, well, have you got anything to say to any of them?
Well, I would say, you know, if it grabs you like it grabbed me and you feel like, just, oh, wow, that's one of those things I really need to do, then absolutely go for it. But likewise, you know, if it feels like the sort of thing you like to do, that, you know, people are different, of course. Like, so it might be for somebody that it's not the Camino, but it's something similar. So whatever really just makes you go, oh, I need to do that, and lands with you. It's important to listen to that. That's a yellow arrow in life. You know, that's a kind of coming back to it and going, actually, I do need that. And yes, obviously a nice couple of weeks by the pool somewhere is nice, but there's just something when it takes it out, in a way that you can be taken out of your life, put into something separate, and then put back in again. If you can do that and it calls to you, just do it. And like my lovely friend Philip said, you know, there's never going to be a good time. You're never going to have tons of money and tons of time to be able to do it. So actually just do it when it calls you and as soon as it's practically possible. So, yeah.
Great. Claire, it's been an absolute joy to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for coming on. Brilliant. No,
thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure.
So that was Jo talking to Claire Bradford about her experiences on the Camino. Really helpful, a really lovely interview. I think there's so much that I took out of that. I found it really touching because she said that phrase that her mentor had said to her, just do it when you can, because there'll always be a reason for you not to do it.
That's a challenge, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, and it took me back to my friend Steve, who had... he died a couple of years ago now, but before that he actually had a stroke at one point. He was the guy I went on a pilgrimage with, and we'd always planned to do the Camino, and he had this stroke, and I remember him sitting in bed and all tubed up, and I said to him, if you come out of this, we are going on the Camino, even if I have to carry you, we'll do it. And he came out, and he did a miraculous recovery, actually, amazing recovery. And we were planning it, and then he got esophageal cancer. So, you know, we couldn't do it. And so I just so important to grasp those moments, to do what you can, whatever you can, when you can. I think that's really, really strong.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you. Yeah. Just do it when you can.
The other thing that really came out to me was the community she found.
Yes.
You know, that we think of it as a solitary thing, maybe. You know, pilgrimage is this sort of solitary, getting away from it. The JOMO, the joy of missing out, you know, getting away from it.
Yes, it's great to be reminded of that, wasn't it? Yeah.
And that is part of it. That's a key part of it. But these people that sort of coalesced and the experiences she had, there's something special, isn't there, about walking?
Yes.
It breaks down barriers.
Yeah, really. And I remember as a dad with my son, you know, I mean, Sophie, you just say a phrase and off she goes. She will talk. But, you know, with Mike, and I think he was typical of many boys, you know, it could be harder work having a conversation with him. But we would go on walks and we'd walk everywhere. And, you know, then conversation just does come more naturally. And I imagine on the Camino, one of the first questions is, why are you walking the Camino?
Yeah.
And generally they're quite intimate reasons for why you're doing it. And so I imagine you share quite deeply and you go deep quite quickly, more than you would with other strangers perhaps, because you have this whole thing on in common. I'm coming here because of this stage of my life I'm in, or to let go of something massive, you know, or a bereavement or a grief or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I can see how community would happen in that sort of context, really.
It reminded me of that film, The Way.
Yes.
With
yes.
Martin Sheen.
Yeah, which wonderful film.
It's very much about that. I love that film. Yeah, so that was great. The another thing that really struck me was her opening bit where she talked about in church not knowing whether she was doing the right thing, the exclusivity of church. And even on the Camino, she was saying, there's a sort of fear that we're doing it wrong. Am I doing this right?
Yeah, yeah.
And historically, one of the things about pilgrimage is the reason it was so popular is because it was a way for ordinary people to engage in deep spirituality.
There you go. Yeah.
Because actually they were excluded from the way. They couldn't go into the chancel. They couldn't do the rest of the, you know, they couldn't be priests. There was a huge amount of exclusion going on in the church, but everybody could go on pilgrimage. And you have these amazing accounts of people going on pilgrimage. Sometimes they had to go on pilgrimage because it was part of their punishment for sin, actually. But that's an interesting thing. But anyway, you know, it is a way for ordinary people, men and particularly women, to experience a depth of spirituality that probably they weren't getting in their services.
I mean, you know, I don't really like gender generalizations, but I do sometimes think that women probably carry a much stronger sense of duty and therefore guilt about leaving a family to do a walk. You know, I can see that could be a bit of an issue. So, you know, hear those words, do it when you can, because it probably won't be easier to do it in 10 years time or 20 years time or 30 years time. So, you know, if you want to do it, then try and do it. But like I say, there's Martin out there who's been trying to do it for years, and for whatever reasons, you know, circumstances have conspired, but I trust it will make it all the more joyful when he does get there, please.
Do you think we should go on a pilgrimage together?
I think that would be dangerous.
Yeah. Especially if we went to a high, rocky place, because one or other of us would push the other one off, I think. By about the end of day two.
Inevitably.
Or we'd never leave the beer festival. That would be the other issue that would happen.
I would be saying to you, what do you mean you want to be quiet? Let's talk.
Anyway, thank you for doing that. I really enjoyed that interview.
Yes.
And we'd love to hear what you think about it. So do get in touch with us. Send us an email to
joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you. Also, do look out the film if you haven't seen it already, The Way, starring Martin Sheen. I'm sure it's available on one of those streaming platforms.
I'll put a link in the show notes to it as well.
There you are.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for journeying with us and being on this pilgrimage together. See what I'm doing? I'm like a professional.
You were like a professional.
It's uncanny. Anyway, thank you for being with us. We'll be back with you in probably a couple of weeks, I think, and back to normal after that.
You've been listening to Journey with Nick Page.
Thank you.